I'm Ryan Yates, and you're listening to Forest Fancast in North America. So we are delighted on this Forest Fancast special stoppage time episode to welcome Paul Taylor to the show, better known as Tails, formerly with the Nottingham Post for a quarter of a century, if you can believe it, now with The Athletic. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi, glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we're delighted to have you on. We've been trying to organise this for a while now. In fact, Paul and I started talking back when Forest last played Derby, not the most recent game, but the one before that. And we were trying to decide whether to record pre or post that match. Schedules didn't quite work out. And so Forest have played Derby again since. And we'll talk about that here during this conversation, Paul. But thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Paul, I mentioned to you off mic that when I'm not able to watch Forest online, obviously being here in the United States, sometimes that can be a bit challenging. Not always able to watch the games live, so instead have to follow them on Twitter. My preference is to follow your feed on Twitter than it is to follow the clubs. How about that?
That's really good. I'm glad to hear somebody does.
And I also mentioned to you as well, I think most of our listeners would agree you have the second best job as it relates to Nottingham Forest. The first best, of course, would be pulling on the Garibaldi and taking to the field there at the City Ground. But to be so close to the team, to be following the team, that must be something that, I mean, does it still give you a buzz, Paul, after all these years?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. You know, I recognise that I'm in a hugely fortunate position and, you know, sometimes on Twitter, somebody will say to you that, your opinion is not valid because you get paid to watch Forest.
No, Paul, what?
The point is, I fully embrace and fully realise how fortunate we are to have a job working in the media and getting paid to, you know, do what we'd be doing on a Saturday afternoon anyway, watching a game of football at a great place like the City Ground or around the Championship, and you know, earning money for something I probably would pay to do otherwise. It's great, it's fantastic, and there's not a day that goes by where you don't feel fortunate to be in the position that you're in, to be able to write about football and write about the sport that you love. It's a brilliant job. It's just fantastic, and every day brings you something new. Generally, it's great.
Now, Paul, as I mentioned in the intro, most of our listeners would know you from your time at the Nottingham Post. Again, to say a quarter of a century, it sounds ridiculous, but I'm sure the time flew by. Obviously, that's been a change in your life recently. You made a pretty significant change leaving the Post and moving over to The Athletic, who, boy, they seem to be gathering traction at a clip. I mean, they are everywhere right now. What was your thinking behind the move?
You know, pretty straightforward, really. It's just, you know, a new challenge. I would never say that anything's wrong or anything is bad or that people are taking the wrong direction in the media. But at The Athletic, we're taking a very different path where we're hoping that quality journalism and really getting our teeth into things in depth and with lots of different voices in it, and perhaps looking at things from a different angle to the way other people might, and giving it some real time and effort, and you know, really doing your background on every article you do, and giving it some love, if you like, will persuade people that just paying a small amount of money for a subscription is worthwhile for what we hope is good journalism. And from my point of view, if you're enjoying what you're writing, then I think it shows in what the end product ends up being. I think it comes through. If you've got a real passion for what you're delivering and a real passion for the subject matter, and you've got the time to go and talk to people, then I think the end product ends up being much, much better. I'd never say a bad word about the Post at all, because I was there for 25 years. It was absolutely fantastic. I'm grateful for the chance they gave me, and I've got some great, great memories from my time there. And so much change from the first days when I was there and in the old Foreman Street offices that are now the Corner House in Nottingham, a big retail centre. They had this huge office, the Post, literally 400 people working there, and the presses were under in the basement of the building. And when the presses started, the whole building shook, and they could go down and get a copy of the paper. And it was just fantastic, you know, knowing that what you'd written was going to be impressed in print within minutes. And that there was a certain nostalgia to that. But the whole industry's changed now. It's all about the internet, and you know, the priorities are different. But I think going to the Athletic now has given me an opportunity to get back to those early days at the Post, when you really took pride in what you did and really got excited when you saw your name in print. Now you kind of take a sense of pride in what we're producing at the Athletic when you see your name at the top of the article that you've put a bit of love and a bit of care and attention into trying to make it as good as it possibly can be, hopefully.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about you know, the good old days, the days of manual typewriters and huge.
I don't go far that far back.
Oh, come on now, come on now! I remember using those at school. Don't be coy. Well,
the Post, bizarrely, was I think the first newspaper in the country to use computers.
Wow.
Yes, there's a small claim to fame that will
there
be long
go.
Forgotten.
Fantastic. Yeah,
when I went there, it was, you know, it was already computerized, and the days of somebody having a fag and slaving over a typewriter were long gone.
That was the image I had of you, with your little your fedora on, your little slip of paper tucked in the band, puffing away on your woodbine, or you're hammering away furiously on the manual keyboard there. Anyway, congratulations on your new gig, Paul. And certainly I've enjoyed reading many of the pieces that you've written. I reached out to you about the piece you wrote in particular regarding the Forest Academy, which I just thought was outstanding. So I certainly would encourage our listeners, if nothing else, to go check out that piece. It was really, really good.
Well, that sums up what I'm talking about. That was one of the most enjoyable things I've written in years. It was brilliant. Forest gave us unbelievable access to go and talk to people in the Academy, to Gary Brazil, who I've known a long time since he was Notts County manager briefly. You know, Joe Worrell's, when you get time to sit down with someone like Joe Worrell, who on the face of it seems like you might think he's your average young footballer who's just bothered about cars or you know, chasing women or whatever, but he isn't. He's really more, he's quite an intelligent fella and quite a deep thinker, and spending a bit of time with him and just talking to him, and he was so passionate about the path he's taken and what that academy gave to him. It just makes you realise that, you know, not every footballer takes for granted the position they're in. I think some of them genuinely do, like me, realise that they're very fortunate to be doing the job that they get to do. Yes, they're very well paid for it. Yes, they, you know, get all the accoutrements that come with being a professional footballer, money, adulation, fame to a degree, nice cars, big house and stuff. But I think he loves it every day of the week when he goes out to train and gets to play football on a Saturday afternoon, and fair play to him for that. I think it comes across when you talk to him. He's a lovely lad. He's, you know, I really hope he continues on the trajectory he's on, because he seems to be heading to good places with his career.
It's funny, I have a real affection for fierce players, what I call fierce players, players that really play with a heart on their sleeve and are just, you know, will run through a brick wall for you. People like Stuart Pearce, briefly, of course, Rory Keane. But the thing you get with Worrell is you get that, but you also, he plays with a smile on his face. I mean, and he seems like he is accessible. He seems like he really is a nice lad. And you didn't often see Stuart Pearce or Rory Keane crack a smile, but with Worrell, you get that side of his personality too. And that certainly comes through in the article. He certainly talks very passionately about the path he's on with Forest and his love for the team. So again, I would encourage our listeners to check that out. Speaking of Nottingham Forest and feeling good, obviously we're out here in North America, so we don't have the benefit of being in the community pool. We don't get the benefit of kind of directly engaging with all that's going on in the city right now that's Forest related. But it feels to us from this side of the pond like there really is a sincere feel-good factor right now around Nottingham Forest and around some of what this new regime are doing at the club. Obviously, with Forza Garibaldi coming onto the scene and everything that they've been doing over the last couple of years, Forest have been getting some really positive national press, not just local press, but on the national scene as well. What do you think that is, Paul? What do you think's happening in the city right now? And how do you feel this new regime, this new leadership are different from those that went before, and how are they influencing what's going on?
Well, it does come from the top. You know, we I was fortunate enough to spend some time in Greece this summer in Athens when Forest played Olympiacos.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The people out there were so friendly, like the Olympiacos media people and all the staff at Olympiacos, to be fair, but they were really kind and really proud in the way that they kind of took us on tours of the city and showed us all the facilities that they've got there. And by that, I mean, the facilities there are incredible. The training ground was awesome. The main stadium was just breathtaking. But beyond that, they've got like handball centres. The Olympiacos, as a club and an institution, really form the heartbeat of the community. They're everywhere. Every corner you turn, there's an Olympiacos building of some description. There's some kind of sporting venue or offices. They've got some really nice offices down by the harbour side in close to Piraeus that are amongst the prettiest football offices you'll ever see. But it's more about the club being at the heart of the community. Every day they feed literally thousands of homeless people through the club. Literally 1,000, 2,000 people a couple of times a day get fed by the club. Marinakis himself has overseen the redevelopment of every school in the Athens area that's close to the club. Paid for the clubs, for the schools to whatever, be decorated, be rebuilt or whatever. Everything that Olympiacos stands for is about being part of the community, and they're trying to do the same thing in Nottingham, and you can see it. We went to the latest launch of the next phase of the stadium redevelopment at the City Ground last night, and again, everything they talked about, a lot of it was about the community, about how not only will the new stand give the players the best possible preparation for a football match, give fans the best surroundings to watch the games from, but more than that, on non-match days, it'll be used for community projects, for schools to come in and take part in various schemes they've got, for so many wide-reaching things that the club want to do to make sure that their tentacles reach out into the community and make the club, whether you like football or not, they make the club central to the community of West Bridgewood and broader Nottingham as well. And I think that's the ethos that everything is built on at Forest. It's about family, it's about community, it's about togetherness, and I think that's brilliant. It's something that's important to Marinakis, and therefore him being the big boss, it's important to everybody else beneath him as well. And most of the things that the club seem to have done since he's been the majority owner have been centred around that. I think it's brilliant, and I think that is at the heart of this kind of spirit, this positivity that's surrounding Forest at the minute. There's other things in it as well, Sabri Namuchi's coming in, done absolutely brilliantly since he's taken over as head coach. He's instilled a team spirit that's not been there for a while. But everything comes from the top downwards, and I think fans are buying into having, the prospect of a revamped City Ground, somewhere that they can take pride in, and perhaps not just look back to their brilliant history, but have something to look forward to in the future as well.
Yeah, it is remarkable that much of what this new leadership have done, much of what everyone associated with the club have been doing this last year, 18 months or so. I wouldn't say everything they touch has turned to gold. That's a little flippant. And, there's a lot of hard work that goes into everything that's happening both on and off the pitch. But, Lumucci's a really interesting case study in that. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Paul. Did you know how to pronounce his name properly before he arrived at the City Ground?
Do you know what? I've never asked him if I've pronounced it right yet. So,
I don't suppose you need to worry about that when you're writing, do you?
I'm guessing it's right because he's not told me it's wrong just yet.
He's a case study. I mean, and I think Brice Samba is another one. We talked about him on the podcast. How has a goalkeeper like Brice Samba, a goalkeeper who I think we all agree could be plying his trade in the Premier League, how did he go under the radar? How were Forest able to snag him? How has he become our number one? And it's things like that that are really quite astonishing. And like you say, I think all go back to leadership and the way the club's being run.
Yeah, well, you're right. Samba basically only played one full season of football prior to Forest finding him. And what they have got is a good scouting network in place now, led up by Jose Nigo and Modisto. Two clearly very astute men who know a footballer when they spot one. When you look back at the work they've done this summer, when you look at Bryce Samba, but also Samba Sow, Elfa Semedo, Thiago Silva, Yuri Ribeiro. I don't think they've made a bad signing this summer. Aaron Muric perhaps hasn't impressed particularly, but you know, we don't know how he would have, you know, he might well have rallied in and got better had he had more time in the side. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now since Samba's come in and done as well as he's done, it's going to be a while, you suspect, before Muric has got any chance to prove that he's better. But you know, broadly speaking, the work that Forest have done in the summer in the transfer market has been absolutely brilliant, and that's another area where you know, there's a real sense of optimism as they look ahead to January, where you know, they've got to do a little bit of work just to get them ready for the second half of the season, but you feel pretty confident that they're going to go out and sign good players, hopefully.
So let's focus on the players then, Paul, for a few minutes. And let's look at them through the lens of our most recent game. Time of recording, that is the most recent victory over Derby. Mm. I should just take out the word victory there. For now on, we just assume that we're always going to beat Derby, because that's just the way of things anymore. no, I'm certainly, as a long-term Forest fan, I'm certainly not taking that for granted. I think our current run is fantastic, this current streak we're on, and long may it continue, but I recognize that it, you know, at some point it will come to an end. Nonetheless, Forest were able to rack up another win against Derby, 1-0. What about that game, Paul, particularly impressed you as far as Forest's performance, and more broadly, which players have impressed you so far this season for Forest?
Well, what I'll start with the first bit. What's impressed me most, not just against Derby, but all season, is I think the foundations for Forest's success under Lamucci so far has just been discipline, organisation and strength. Mm. You know, you look at players like, I know they didn't play against Derby, but Sow and Semedo, the renewal of the rejuvenation of Ben Watson at the back, Worrell and Dawson, Bryce Samba's a big, strong lad. They've got a spine there that's really strong. And Ryan Yates, since, you know, Sal and Smith have been injured, they've got a spine there that's really, really strong. They don't get bullied anymore, Forest. No. They don't get pushed off the ball. They're really capable of rolling their sleeves up and battling as well as playing football. And that's been the foundation for me. And it, certainly there was that fierce level of organisation and determination and grit that really saw them through against Derby. For much of the game, they almost played like an away side. They look to keep things tight, to be compact and play on the counter-attack and hurt Derby on the counter. And it worked brilliantly. They allowed Derby so few sights of goal, so few opportunities. And fortunately, they've got players on their own side who tend to take the chances when they come their way. Nobody more so than Lewis Grabban. You would like to see them create more chances. I think they do need to find a way to get a little bit more attacking threat if they want to carry on the momentum that they've got right now. But I think when that's the biggest criticism you can find of the team, then you're not in a bad position. If the biggest complaint you've got is that you'd like to see them win by more goals, then you're not in a bad spot, really, are you? So
you name-checked a few players there, Paul. Are there one or two in particular who have really not just stood out to you, but maybe surprised you this season by their performances so far?
I think when you look at the impact that Gonsalves and Diaz had last season, and it wasn't generally a positive one without being too negative, you kind of got a level of concern that when you saw Thiago Silva and Yuri Ribeiro come into the squad, you kind of wondered if they were going to fall by the wayside in a similar fashion. So whilst it was completely unfounded scepticism in the sense that you just thought, well, they signed another two Portuguese players, they're probably going to be rubbish. As it turned out, they couldn't be more different. You know, Thiago Silva produced one of the best performances I've seen in a Forest shirt in a long time against Derby. He was fantastic. He was frankly taking the mickey half the time, and it was brilliant to watch.
It was like
three or four clips of just outright mickey taking. I was going to say something stronger there, but I won't.
you can do, Paul. It's okay. We have an explicit rating, so.
There's the trick on the edge of the box where he just went one way, flicked the ball one way, then flicked it back the other.
Yeah, the little elastico. Yeah.
The one where he played a pass off his own leg. It was just ridiculous. And then he was just sublime. He was brilliant. He was fantastic. And I think if you're asking me which players have perhaps surprised me or been better than I thought they might be, I'd probably say Silva and Ribeiro. And Ribeiro, you can see he started off his career as a winger, and you can kind of see that in the way he plays at fullback. He's all about getting forward and being attack minded, and getting into the final third and making things happen. It's ironic, actually, because for the first time in years, Forest have got not just one but two decent left backs.
Yeah, that's right.
That's been a problem for years. They never have a decent left back, and now they've got two because Jack Robinson's probably one of the best they've had in a long time. He's just a bit more defensive minded. So they've got good options there. They're attack minded fullback and a defensive one. So.
No, I agree. It's interesting when you're talking about the deluge of Portuguese players we had show up all within quick succession. It kind of gave me shades of David Platt and his Italian Renaissance that didn't quite pan out, did it? So kind of interesting. Also, the point you made as well about Silva, I think, is an important one. But it feels, I think, De Forest fans, I can't obviously speak for all of them, Paul, but I think from what we hear back from our listeners and what we see on Twitter, and of course everything that's on Twitter, Paul, is 100% accurate, so it feels to us like Silva and occasionally King Carvo and very, very occasionally, not as much as we'd like, but Joe Lolly, occasionally they have these flashes of skill, right? They have these moments of offensive brilliance. And I think there's a general concern that there's not enough of that. I mean, back to your point earlier, Paul, yes, the team is incredibly well organized. Yes, it's very difficult to beat. I'd suggest it's maybe riding its luck a little bit. It looks to me as though we're a little susceptible on the back post to just about every cross that comes into the box. But nonetheless, there is a degree of organization there. There's a degree of just grit that we haven't had in the past, which is great to see, and will carry you through a season. Will help you draw games you should have lost or win games that you were likely to draw. We'd like to see a little bit more flair, though. We'd like to see a little more offensive output. So as we head toward that January transfer window, what do you think the team need to be looking at, Paul, to help us develop that side of the game this season?
Well, I know at the very top of their shopping list, and this is genuinely a fact, the top of their shopping list is a striker and a player who can play either as a winger or an attacking midfielder. That's their two priorities in January, and they'll look to the first two signings they want to make, and perhaps the only two priorities they've got are to sign two players in that mould. They're very keen on Dwight Gale. As we get closer to January, I think that's starting to look more and more like a difficult signing because they won't be the only clubs involved trying to get him by any means. And there's still the question whether Newcastle will let him go at all. But it's somebody of that calibre they want. And I don't think that's necessarily a reflection on Lewis Grabban because they rate him very highly and rightly so. But at the minute, with complete respect to Rafa Mir, who I think is probably a better player than he gets credit for in some
quarters. I agree.
I'm not sure, having said that without contradicting myself too much, that if Lewis Grabban were to get injured, would you fairly expect Rafa Mir to come in and do the same job he does and get the same amount of goals? I think if we're honest, the answer is probably no.
I agree also.
So they need somebody else to just support Lewis if he gets injured or suffers a dip in form or gets suspended, because you can't expect him to play 40 odd games this season. Yeah. We saw last season that he had a little niggling Achilles problem that didn't go away. It really impacted on him in the second half of the season. He wasn't quite the same player. But what is encouraging is that Sabri Lamouchi seems to be a manager that can really get the best out of him. We were talking to Grabban the other day, and he was saying, we asked him what gets the best out of him, what kind of manager gets the best out of him, and he just said somebody who's respectful and honest, and then went on to talk about how Lamouchi was exactly that. I'm not sure he's always seen eye to eye with Forest's previous managers, certainly not during the spell when he was injured and there was a debate about whether he was being pushed too hard or about whether he should play or not. But I think Lamouchi is somebody who's found the right wavelength to communicate with Lewis and get the best from him. I don't think he's a difficult player to manage. I think he's actually quite just an intelligent, deep-thinking kind of character, and you need to be on the same wavelength as him to get the best out of him, and it feels like the Lamouchi very much is.
Yeah, it's interesting actually when you consider Lamucci and you consider Graben, and obviously all we have to go by is the public face of both, but they do seem to be cut from similar cloth in the way they carry themselves and the way they talk and what seems to be of importance to them. So that doesn't surprise me to hear that, Paul. So a few stoppage times ago, we had David Jackson on the show. I'm sure you know well, lovely guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we rather put him on the spot. We had five rapid-fire questions that we shot his way, asked him not to think about them too much, just to give us his knee-jerk response to each. you know, I've talked to Jacko before. He couldn't help himself, Paul. He gave us a response, and then he spent 10 minutes justifying it. So you're welcome to do the same, my friend, whatever comes to you. I want to go ahead and hit you with the same five questions, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, go for it.
All right, here we go. Home shirt or away shirt?
Away shirt.
Oh, that's interesting. Jacko said the same thing. Yeah, do you have a reason for that? I know I just told you this is going to be rapid fire, but I'm curious now.
It's I have no real explanation for it. So I just like the colour.
Okay.
It's nothing more complex than that. I was trying to think of something more profound, but you know, to be honest, I just like it. It's a nicer kit.
Well, it's funny because Jacko said the same thing. He talked about specifically about the current, you know, two-tone blue, which I'm not a massive fan of. But the one thing I do like about the away kit is I like the mystique, right? You never quite know what's going to come out, right? Are they going to be playing in blue? Are they going to be playing in black? Are they going to be playing in, you know, neon orange, which I think's ever happened yet. So there you go. Forrest, get on that one. All right. Clough Stand or Bridgford End?
Clough Stand.
All right. 1979 or 1980?
79.
Okay. You and Jacko are very consistent right now. and I suspect you're also going to agree on this one. Pierre Van Hooijdonk or Stan Collymore?
Stan.
There you go.
All right, here's did I agree with him on that one as well?
You did. Yeah, here's the... I said it was five, actually. I just realized it was six questions. But here's number five. Again, probably the most contentious of the lot. You're going to need to think on this one, Paul.
Okay.
Robin Hood or Sherwood Bear?
Robin Hood. Just, come on, there's so much connected with Robin Hood and Nottingham, isn't there? It's like, he's Nottingham. It's everything that's about the place.
Very good. Yeah. All right. Let's see if you're a sweep with Jacko. Let's see if you're 100%. Final question. League or Cup?
League. League every day of the week. Forest have been out of the top flight for 20-odd years and, you know, the day they get back into the Premier League is going to be one that everybody remembers for a long time. And as much as it'd be great to win a cup, once that moment's gone, there's no legacy from it, is there? There's nothing that carries on beyond it. It's just, well done, you've won a cup. But if you got back into the Premier League immediately, there'd be, you know, more money, more kudos, more crowds, more everything, and you could build from there.
More ability for us in America to watch games.
There you go. Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you that final question is where you and Jacko diverge.
Really? He said cup.
He did say cup. Yeah, he...
What an odd man.
Oh, wow. His rationale was, you know, he grew up in a time where Forest were forever at Wembley. And so, you know, they were always competing in cup finals. And that was just a really... those were very fond memories for him. And I can certainly understand that. Again, my age, I'm actually a little older than him also. And so I just about remember the tail end of the, of course, the famous European Cup campaigns. But certainly the 80s and what felt like, annual visits to Wembley. Those were halcyon days for sure. So anyway. All right. Final question for you, my friend.
Okay.
Your prediction on the season. So is this finally going to be the year? You just referenced it. Forest have been out of the Premier League now for goodness knows how long. I can't even keep track at this point. But is this the year where finally Forest get out of the wilderness and back to the promised land?
Do you know what? I've been covering Forest since the Gary Megson days. My days started in a time when they were just heading into League One. So
I just had a gag reflex there, Paul.
Yeah. I remember very clearly that the entire away end at Oldham singing for him to go. I think they were 3-0 down at half time, and literally to a man, the entire away end was chanting for him to go. He did actually. He quit at half time, and he wanted to leave the ground and had to be persuaded to stay for the second half.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Incredible.
But that was that. I've digressed there, haven't I? Massively.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great to hear.
But, you know, every year since then, you think this is going to be Forest year. Mm. How many times have we sat there? Even when things haven't been great, even under Philippe Montagnier, when things went a bit crazy, you thought, oh, maybe they've got a chance. They've made some interesting signings. But to stop sitting on the fence, yes, I think it probably is. And I don't know why. I can't really justify it beyond the fact that everything feels good. It feels like there's a sense of togetherness there and a squad that looks capable. Let me add the caveat that if they sign a good striker and a good winger in January, then yes, it will be their year. That could be the defining thing for me, just purely because I worry about what would happen if Grabs got injured. Beyond that, if they can do those two things, I think they've got as good a chance as they've had in a very long time of finishing in the top six. I wouldn't put my house on finishing in the top two, but I think they've got a very, very good chance of finishing in the top six. And Lamucci is such a calm, calculated, details guy that I wouldn't put it past him to finally be the man that ends Forest playoff hoodoo, and maybe Jacko can get the trip to Wembley he's always wanted.
Marvellous. Well, there is nary a man in Nottingham that knows Forest better than you. Certainly not a journalist. I think he knows Forest much better than you do, Paul Taylor. And so I'm gonna end on that, because if that's your take on the season, if that's your take on how it could conclude, that's the perfect place to bring this interview to a close. Before we do, though, Paul, go ahead and share out where folks can find you, where they can read your work with The Athletic. I'd love for folks to check you out. And like I said before, certainly that article you did regarding the Academy was fantastic, but you've written several good pieces so far this season. So where can people find that work, Paul?
Well, you can either follow me on Twitter at Nottingham Tales, where you can always find links to my stories, or at theathletic.com. The website is very good. I encourage you to go and have a look. I think if you keep an eye out, there's normally some periodic offers to get a little bit of money off. But for the price of a cup of coffee a week, you get some very good journalism. Give it a go.
Wonderful. Yeah, wonderful. I agree. And you get some great insights as well. I think that's the thing that makes it really compelling, is the fact that this isn't just surface writing. This isn't just, you know, something that every newspaper is churning out. This is, you get real insight, you get real depth in your writing. You get access that's hard to find anywhere else. And that's the thing that makes it compelling for me. So
keep it going, my friend. It's way beyond Forest as well. There's so much good stuff to read, like from all aspects of football. It's a brilliant thing to be part of. And yeah, I couldn't be enjoying it more. It's great.
Good stuff. Well, thanks so much again for joining us, Paul. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, this is Shane Malcolm.
And this is Jordan Schweitzer.
We're the creators of Boot Bags.
Fashionable, durable, washable. Boot Bags are the most convenient way to carry your cleats to and from training or games. Check us out at bootbags.us.
You're listening to the Forest Fancast podcast.